This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie Dobbin?
I'm amazingly well, Dean Holland. It is a beautiful, crisp, clear, sunny day at my house. Blue sky everywhere.
Indeed, crisp is the, I love that word. It is a crisp morning, isn't it? I had to go out there. I went out in my towel this morning. Why?
Oh my. What were
because
you doing?
There was a squirrel sitting in my platform bird feeder. And then I got about halfway across the lawn and I thought, okay, Dean, you should not be out here with your towel. Go back in and get some pants on.
And the squirrel didn't budge, probably.
No, he didn't. But then I went out and I went after him and I clapped my hands and he ran up the, anyway, it's all good.
So we put a baffle on our pole that the platform feeder is on because for the same reason, you know, you have a squirrel lounging, lying on its back, popping peanuts in its mouth, tail flicking in the wind. It's like, no, this isn't for you.
No. So that was my, anyway, other than that, this is good. What's going on in your garden this week? What's going on? What's coming up? What's going down? What's going ahead?
Well, I'm still harvesting lots of things like tomatoes. We're just about done the tomatoes, but yeah, I'm going to be roasting more tomatoes, making more soup. And yeah, there's kale, there's carrots, even eggplants are still coming. But this is a great time of year. I'm dividing some perennials and planting some new ones I picked up, you know, sort of redesigning a few corners of the garden. I was moving around a lot of rocks yesterday. And I said to Elliot when I went to bed early, I was like, I feel like I'm part of a chain gang or something. Like I've been hard labor, you know, busting rocks in my penal colony. And it's like, wow, I'm too old for this, but it was great. I did some great work.
Excellent. And what kind of, and perennials, are these things that you just went and bought or that you got from people that you know, or how does it,
No, I bought them. They're kind of specific. I have some really hot, dry, sunny locations and big gardens in those hot, dry situations. So very specific perennials that will withstand the wind, the drought, the sun, and, you know, things like lavender. I put in, you know, a couple lavender plants and Gallardia. I'm trying to always thinking about seasonal color right from the very beginning, the spring, early spring, crocuses, etc., right to the very end when we, you know, frost and snow hopefully falls. So always want to have that pollinator friendly stuff. Always have to have those flowers, nectar, all of it's got to be happening the whole time.
Okay, Charlie, I'm going to give out the numbers and we're going to get people to give us a call on this first garden show of October. Yeah, here we are. Yeah. We would love for you to give us a call, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. But if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, here's the number, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Anthony know if you're a first-time caller. And we will give you your garden wings. We want you to call often. We want you to call early. And one question per call, please. Okay, again, often, early, and one question per call. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And I just want to mention, I'm going to give out the numbers again because we have lots of room on the lines right now. And now's the time to get in line to make sure that we get to your question, okay? If you leave it until 1:45, 2:10, there's a really good chance that we won't get to you, okay? So again, if you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. for 740. And Charlie, do you have some like announcements you want to go over? Or
yeah, just a reminder. Thank you, Dean. The Asian Court Garden Club will be having their monthly meeting and show this Monday, October 7th. The speaker is Lorraine Johnson, and she's quite an effective and well-educated speaker, talking on climate change in the garden, which is interesting. So there is a show as well. Plants, vegetables, design. So that's always fun. The big competition, you know, the cutthroat competition. You and I witnessed some of that at the exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
And so that'll be all happening, of course, at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue. So that's Midland and Shepherd. Timing is 7:15, basically. Bring your own cup and enjoy the Asian Court Garden Club. They're a pretty fun bunch. A reminder that I am speaking as part of the Artworth for Adults, adult nature education going on in Campbellford. So that's my next speaking engagement with them is October 16th. That is at the Aaron Theater at 7 p.m. in Campbellford. So gardening in a changing climate. So that's a trend going on in terms of speaking engagements. But there's lots going on that way. But, you know, when you asked me about harvest, I neglected to tell you, you know what I harvested this past week, but earlier in the week?
What's that?
Sweet potatoes.
Oh, right. You said you had them. They were popping up above the ground, you said.
Three laundry baskets.
Oh, wow.
Really? Off of two plants.
Wow.
Like, we're talking serious. Now, they're not full. They're half full. But when you, some of them, I bet you, they're the size of a newborn baby. Like, they're huge. And, so I, because I don't want to ever just eat them right out of the garden, just like garlic, we cure them, makes them better, makes them sweeter to cure them. Also makes them, the outside skin, tougher and firmer for long-term storage. When they come out of the ground, the skin is so thin, you can scratch it with your fingernail. So you want to get that toughened up so it's more of a, something that, you know, can handle being handled. So how do you cure sweet potatoes? High temperature and high humidity, like 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Really? You know,
80% humidity. Like,
so you need sauna. Like a sauna. Yeah. Sauna. You need a home sauna to put them in. I have no idea.
I know. It's kind of crazy. Like, who's got any of that? I don't have a sauna, but I do have a bathroom with a heated floor. So the sweet potatoes are all lined up in my bathroom, in laundry baskets, on the heated floor, and getting cured, so to speak.
That is fascinating. Yeah. I feel like I need to jump in my car and come down and get tomatoes and sweet potatoes from you. You have an abundance and have a visit.
That's a great idea. I think we will at some point because you're doing a show in my area.
I am. Yeah, for sure. In November. Yeah, I'll be in Sterling. Yeah. But let's see. You know, let's go to our first caller. We have Anne on the line. She's calling from Hagersville. And welcome to the Garden Show, Anne.
Thank you. I was told for my honeysuckle shrubs to trim them when they finished blooming, but the end of September they were still blooming. So when's the best time to trim my honeysuckle bushes?
You're right. It is challenging with plants like honeysuckle. Weigela is another example. They tend to keep blooming. Some of the newer varieties of lilac, same thing. What I would do, I mean, you do need to trim them. They get pretty scraggly if you don't trim them. I'd be inclined to just do what I would do is after that first flush of blooms, which is usually in June sometime, I would do about a 1/3 cutback on the plants, shaping the plants, thinning if necessary, looking for crossed branches. Remember, you can always take out dead wood at any time of year on any of your plants. Don't wait for a certain season for that. And then if you had to really do a major pruning on the honeysuckle, like they just needed full rejuvenation, I'd probably do it in the fall and I'd cut them right down if you're looking to really, really rejuvenate, but you will give up flowers for the following season when you do that.
Well, they're the height that I like, so could I just do kind of a gentle pruning in the fall then?
Yeah, and if you like the height, you could gently prune them anytime, but again, you will give up some flowers next spring for any pruning you're doing now.
Okie dokie. Thanks for your help.
Okay. My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call there, Ann. Well, we have another Ann on the line, but we're first going to take another commercial break, and we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're here back on The Garden Show, and 5th of October already. You can just see how it's just speeding by, eh?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. I don't even know where the summer went, much less where the fall's going.
Yeah, but I have to say this. I have said to a number of people, and I've said when I've been hosting on the radio, that I think it's been a pretty nicely balanced year for us. I had to put the sprinkler out very, very little this year, and we didn't have a crisp lawn. It just seemed that we would get numbers of days of sunshine and that we'd get a good, decent rain, and then it would green things up again. So for my money, anyway, where we are, the 2 hours north of Toronto, it's been a good year.
And you know what? We never had a crispy lawn. Like, we don't water, obviously. And this is the first summer we've been here. It's only been 5 years, but still, first summer we've been here where we didn't have a crispy lawn. Mm-hmm. It got a pale, but it didn't get to that, you know, cornfield.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had some luck with my grass seed that I've put down in the last month in different spots. And so I'm happy about that as well. It's come up really nicely. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
and there's
perfect.
That feeling of satisfaction when you do something in it and it responds the way that you're hoping.
Oh, totally. That's what gets you the garden bug when things work.
Gets you hooked.
Exactly.
Indeed. Okay, I said we had another Ann on the line, and we do. This is from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Ann.
Good morning to both of you. I'm planning to repot some of my indoor plants, and I would like to know what is the best indoor potting soil, all-purpose one.
Yeah, and you live in Mississauga. You know what? What's the best? I think a lot of times we get brand loyal, brand conscious. A couple of the big ones that you'll see out there at the major stores, one would be Miracle-Gro or Scott's. They have a whole line of potting mixes. The other would be Promix or Premier. They have a whole line of potting mixes. Either of them are great, work fine. You know, they're all made either in Quebec or Ontario. The thing to watch for and realize that part of the marketing of these large companies, they'll put a bag together and it'll say, potting mix for vegetables. And then the one beside it says potting mix for fruits, and then potting mix for tropical plants, and potting mix for flowers.
Yeah, I've seen all those different bags.
Yeah, and they're all exactly the same. So just recognize that, I mean, I'm speaking a bit generally there. They might not be exactly the same. For example, a potting mix for cactus plants, cacti and succulents, should have a slightly different formula with, you know, a little better drainage, chunkier materials. And also be aware, there's usually a little fertilizer charge, they call. So look for those three numbers. Do a little comparison there. And they're very tiny amounts of fertilizer, but it's because potting mix is peat-based. Peat and vermiculite usually, and core, which is coconut husk. There's no natural nutrient in potting mixes. There's no soil. There's no nutrient. So they will put a little charge in there just to give a start for your plants. And then it's up to you to maintain fertilizing depending on the season. So yeah, I wouldn't sweat it too much. Make sure the bags are sealed. Don't buy an open bag because that's when you can get diseases and insects in there. Many of the manufacturers will pack the mix dry, which means it's much easier to carry depending on where you live. But, you know, that up to the 35th floor of the condo, it's nice to not be carrying a heavy bag. So just those kinds of things can have impact on what I would buy. But yeah, it doesn't go bad. So remember, you can buy a big bag and then save what you don't use till next spring.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you so much. I was so confused when I was looking at the bags in the store, and then I'm going, which one should I buy? What would be the best for me to buy? So that's why I said I'm going to give you a call and see what your opinion is about this. Yeah.
Well, no, thank you. Thank you for calling, because that is a very common challenge, I think. And I've back in my retail days, had discussions with customers who said, no, no, I have to get the one that's got vegetables in the picture because I'm growing vegetables. And I'm like, no, it's the same stuff. I just don't have the one with the vegetables. And they're like, oh, no, I'm going to go somewhere else. I was like, okay.
Okay. Okay. Thanks very much for the call there, Ann. So, yeah, I mean, the difference could be so slight.
If there's a difference at all.
If there's a difference at all. Wow.
A lot of, see, gone are the days of just potting soil. They had to make it all specialized.
Right.
But most of our plants don't require specialized soil. Yes, there are a few. There's no question. You know, there's the acid-loving plants, right? If you were, if you had a gardenias
azalea
in the house. Yeah, these are going to, there'll be some extra sulfur in there. And like I mentioned, cacti will have special, even African violet soil will be a little bit, should be a little bit different from a regular potting mix. But otherwise, it's all the same.
Okie dokie. Numbers to call are the same week after week as well. We haven't changed them. No. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Okay, we are going to stay in the city of Mississauga. This time we're talking to Hazel. Welcome to the Garden Show, Hazel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question this morning is, we have two grapevines which are have trailed along our fences, and what I'd like to know is, what's the best way to prune them?
Are you pruning them for privacy or pruning them for grapes?
For grapes, I guess, not privacy, for grapes, because they've trailed, you know, like to the end of our fence. We have a wire fence and a wooden fence against, you know, the dividing fence between neighbors, and they've both gone as far, almost as far as we have room for. So I'm wondering, should we be pruning, and how do we do that?
Okay, so I'm just trying to think of, and you're in Mississauga. Right, so if the grapevines are pruned so that they become very, very dense, which they will, you know, if you take the tip off a plant, you'll get side shoots. So instead of just having one long single tendril, take off the tip of that tendril and suddenly you've got lots of side shoots. So you've got a lot more growing off of what was a single tendril. That can be a good thing if you're looking for more grapes and for more coverage of an area. But it can also set up a situation with air circulation and sun penetration being insufficient, so that different mildews, powdery mildew, but certainly grapes are very susceptible to some of the downy mildew, et cetera, that really cause problems on the fruit. Those mildews can get set up if there's insufficient air and insufficient sun. Also, of course, at this time of year, you've got all your little wasps coming in to help. And then the birds obviously have been doing their thing for the last month or so as well. So it's a bit of a challenge, just sort of balancing what you want.
Grapes off of one vine. So we've done our bit for the birds this year.
Right. You have to net the grapes to really protect them from the birds. Mm-hmm. Or get those big cannons they use here in where I live in Prince Edward County. These cannons go off to scare the birds out of the grapes that are, of course, growing in the vineyards.
Concord, but I don't remember the other one. It's a different variety, but I don't remember. Yeah. We had lots of grapes.
No, it's lovely to grow them, but you've got that sort of cost benefit. You've got to keep the plants healthy with sufficient air and sun and, you know, fertility, et cetera. But then you also want to make sure you're getting as much of a harvest as you can.
So is there anything we can do? Can we prune or leave them be?
Oh, well, no, I would definitely, you want to prune to control them to grow where you want them to be. So yes, there's going to, particularly if, like you said, you've got to the end of the fence, you don't want to turn around and have it start doubling back on itself. So you're going to have to prune back. And remember, by pruning back next spring, I wouldn't do my pruning now. I'd wait until the plants are dormant. So it could be November, or it could be March, but don't prune until then, until the plants are completely dormant, and then look at the vines, prune them in such a way so that the next growth will go where you want it to go. So you might have to bring those, depending on where they're planted on the fence, you know, bring them back by a half if necessary. Take away all the what you've pruned, compost it, and get ready for that next big surge of growth next spring.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good luck with that, Hazel. Charlie, may I revisit Sweet Potato Land for a moment?
Sure.
Just wondering, how long are the sweet potatoes going to live in your bathtub?
Are you just putting this something on your calendar, Dean?
No, I'm just really curious as to, I mean, I don't know how long you cure garlic either. And you've brought up a good point. We've got in many counties, including like Collingwood, for example, a lot of the farmers markets will go until Thanksgiving weekend. And not that you can't go directly to the garlic grower, but I have been a big proponent for a handful of years now. I do not want to buy garlic that comes from a continent around the other side of the world.
No.
And so I buy a good size bag of garlic, and I still have some from last season, and it gets me through the whole winter, and I keep it hanging in my cellar downstairs, and I just go down and I get three or four. But those are the types of things that that I buy at the market. But I don't know how long you have to cure that stuff for. So I'm curious about sweet potatoes.
Okay. So, well, sweet potatoes is 7 to 10 days, you know, sort of depending on your temperatures and humidity. You can tell, though. You can really see that the tuber starts to change with time. So once you've cured it sufficiently, now you can go into your root cellar or your cool storage area with those tubers for 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
But if you take them straight out of the ground and then try putting them into your cool root store, you know, cold storage, they're just going to rot. They won't actually survive. So that, and garlic, it's so same thing. When it comes out of the ground, it's got that moisture. There's that softness to the outer, what's called the tunicate, you know, the outer coating, or if you will, the jacket on the garlic. So what we do with garlic, of course, is it's kind of the opposite of sweet potato. You want it to get good air circulation around your garlic. So you want it to dry out a bit, but not too much, because if it dries out too much, then it all starts to shrivel. So you've got that sweet window of about 10 days, 2 weeks. I always keep saying, like, I don't have a great spot to hang garlic. Sometimes people will just put it in a shed, you hang it from the rafters in the shed and turn on a fan so they've got that air moving through. And that can work, or in a garage. The best, though, is just having an old broken down barn, you know, one of those barns with barn boards missing. And then you hang your garlic in there. You've got that natural airflow right through the barn, and you can hang up all kinds of garlic. And that's what I'm looking for, is a broken down barn.
Broken down barn.
Bring onto my property. So if anybody's selling a barn, let me know.
Okay. If you got a broken down barn, then you need to email. This is a great time to give out your email, too. If you have a broken down barn, or if you have a question that you think would be better if you send a picture to Charlie, you want to reach out to her at c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Diane on the line from Brampton. Welcome to the Garden Show, Diane.
Yes, hello.
Morning.
I don't want to keep you too long, because a month ago I caught part of the program and heard about something affecting boxwood hedges. And I have about 25 feet of hedge in two spots, and didn't notice until after your show that through the middle it was going brown. And I got some BFK, but I took a piece of Garden Center in Calneast, and the head man there, he said that because the stem was still green, he thought it was the caterpillar thing. But there's also, I don't know if it's a virus or there's something else affecting boxwood that only a licensed arborist can spray. Now, I've never seen a caterpillar, a moth, there's no cobwebs. And I haven't had a chance to spray it with this BFK. And if I don't, will it total the hedge?
Yes. Well, okay. The bad news on it's called a box tree moth. So it's a new invasive pest first found in 2018 in not far from you in Etobicoke and on boxwood. This boxwood tree moth will annihilate your plants. And yes, even with the spray, the BTK spray, you need to inspect your boxwood on a daily, preferably basis, watching, because once you spray the BTK, you make the leaves poisonous. So when the little moth tries to eat any, it dies. However, new leaves grow. Assuming that you've sprayed and everything, the plant is healthy, it continues to grow. The new leaves are not poisonous. New boxwood tree moths will come along and start eating. So it becomes a sort of a every 2 week, 10 day spray, continuing right through, because there's multi generations a year. The little, it's a moth as an adult, but it's a little caterpillar as a baby. So, and all forms of the moth will cause damage. So yes, big problem. Ultimately, without tender loving care or retiring from your job so you can stay home and watch your boxwood, you end up needing to replace the boxwood with something. The virus you were referring to, yes, there's nothing we spray on the virus. I'm not even sure if arborists have the proper spray, and timing again is everything when it comes to spraying for viruses. So what I would do, if your boxwood looks pretty good, has it got green leaves on it now?
Yes, it has. But through this, like the top is green and across the bottom, and I didn't notice it until on one end I saw through the middle. You could just start to see some browning, like just looking at it from even the sidewalk. You could see some of the leaves through the middle were going brown. And then when I looked across the, at the back of it, it was worse, and it is spreading through the rest of the hedge. And a neighbor two doors down, she had the same problem, and the neighbor across the street had one. It was small. One, like there's maybe four or five under a window, and one of them was totaled. Like it's completely brown. So, but the thing is, how do you know the difference? The man at the garden center said that because the stem was still green, he thought it was the caterpillar or the moth. But I have never, there's no cobweb. I've never seen, I've checked them. I've never seen, I don't know how big the caterpillars are. I have never seen
moths. And they're pretty small. They're about a quarter of an inch at their biggest. So there is the boxwood blight that you're referring to. It is, again, it's one of those things that it's a fungal disease, actually, not a virus. Couple of things to keep in mind, I guess probably the most important, and this is true for all our garden plants. You know how boxwood, we always like, generally, we like them really tidy. It's a very formal hedge that we design when we plant boxwood. We plant them and then we make them into little square tops and square sides. And so the trick with that is, I mean, that is stressful on the plants, doing that tidy trimming. And it's also, we want a dense plant. We want it nice and thick. So we've got the plants growing close together and we set up an environment for disease when we do that. So never, ever, ever do any pruning or shearing on a wet plant when it's raining or going to rain or, you know, it has just rained. Don't ever shear a plant or do any cutting on it. And remember as well, what we do prune out or what falls to the ground as part of a disease or a part of a cycle of defoliation, clean it up. Good garden hygiene will save more plants and prevent more problems than you can imagine. So that anything, you know, little rake on down at the ground level, getting all the disease stuff out. But there are some really, really good websites now because of the boxwood problem. And ultimately, I think, like, I remember one of the websites is called Thinking Outside the Boxwood. And it's a whole bunch of suggestions for substitute plants to replace boxwood if you've got issues you just can't deal with. And it was out of the University of Ohio, that website. And we did, speak about it quite extensively whenever that was. I don't remember. But we do have podcasts, so you could go back and listen to that show. I'll just look back at my notes and tell you what date we did a lot of talking on boxwood. So I can give you a chance. Oh, there it is right there, June 8th. Go back to the podcast of June 8th of this year And you, if you listen, you'll hear quite a long diatribe on boxwood.
Okay, yeah, because there, I don't know how you tell the difference, whether it's the virus or the blight or...
You will see the insects. You will see, well, if you keep looking every single day, the webbing is something that the larvae do to protect themselves so nobody can eat them. And then, because remember, every little caterpillar, before it can become a moth, just like butterflies, they have to make a little cocoon. So they have, in that, they spin that webbing to make the cocoon to then emerge with wings and fly away and lay eggs. So if you see no webbing whatsoever, it is more likely that you are struggling with blight, and then it just also just becomes a whole other issue of dealing with blight, because it's, again, not an easy one to deal with. Also, if you know what variety of boxwood you grew, that makes a difference, because certain varieties are more susceptible than others.
Thanks very much for the call, Diane. I'm sorry we have to run. We have to go to commercial break, but we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we have a bunch of callers on the line, so let's get right to it. We're going to Kim in Brantford. Welcome to The Garden Show, Kim.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I'm in Bradford, and I have lilac that's... Okay. Yes, thanks. I have a lilac that's about 18 feet wide and about 20 feet high. It's probably 30 years old. I want to start cutting it back to get it down to half that size. And I've heard you say to do a third at a time. Am I too late to do that this year? Or can I get out there today and start pruning?
It is a perfect day for pruning with the blue sky at my place. Nice and clear and, you know, cool. However, yes, you can. You can prune that lilac. You could prune it quite hard if you wanted to, but it will mean you have fewer, if any, flowers next year on the lilac.
Okay. Well, I don't have really any anyway, so maybe
okay.
Just start. So in 2 years,
if it's 30 years old, have you amended the soil? Have you put any kind of composted manure or compost around the plant?
No.
Okay, do that. So as part of this pruning and bringing it down, that's what we would consider a rejuvenation of the plant. So as part of the rejuvenation, you're going to do some nice clean cuts with a sharp tools. You're going to take angled cuts where the bud you're cutting just above is going to grow in the direction you want the plant to grow. And at the same time, you're going to clean up all the debris at the ground, pull all the weeds, whatever's down there, and then get some nice composted manure. You don't have to do the manure part today. You could wait another month or so on that if you want. But bottom line is, supplement the soil and you'll be absolutely flabbergasted at how gorgeous this lilac will be next spring.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kim. Okay, we have a couple of trends going today. We have callers from Mississauga, and we have Ann's. We're on our third Ann today.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So welcome. This one's from Georgetown. Welcome to The Garden Show, Ann.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
I just wondered, I have an eastern red bush, red bud, that my granddaughter gave me. How do I plant it in the soil to keep it till next year?
Is it in a pot right now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leave it in the pot.
High.
Okay. Pardon?
And it's only about knee high, and it's only like, it's as thick as a cell phone cord. Not even that thick. It's very skinny.
Right. So that's fine. And you're just not sure where you want to put it, or you're not ready to plant it yet?
No, I'm not ready to plant it yet.
Okay. If it's in a pot, make sure the pot has drainage holes. Does it have
right.
that?
Yes.
Great. So leave it in the pot. Just wherever, perhaps you have a vegetable garden that is empty in the fall, or some area that is open and empty in the fall, bury the plant, pot and all, under the ground. Just bury the pot under the ground. If you want, put some leaves up over, sort of over top of the pot, around the plant as the fall and autumn is progressing. It will be fine. Next spring, when the ground thaws, you'll pull the pot up out of the ground, wash it off, and it will, you know, wake up, start to grow, and then you will decide where you're going to give it its final location.
Okay. Can I put some chicken wire in the brand bag around it to keep it from the... I was going to put it right next to my house where it's going to be, like, shaded. So it won't get
for the winter
or whatever.
I mean, the cool thing about redbud is it is naturally a plant. It's native to Ontario, and it naturally grows as an understory plant in a forest. So, yes, you can ultimately give it a location that is quite shady because it likes shade. It can be out in full sun, but it can also be in a fair amount of shade. So for the winter, it doesn't really matter where you put it, whether it's sun or shade. Its final location is going to be a spot where, remember, it's going to get wide, though. Red buds, even though it's a skinny little thing now, it's going to be, 12, 15 feet wide as it grows.
Yeah, but I can't put some wire around it and that mesh stuff to keep it for the winter so it don't die on me?
It won't die. You don't need to put any wire or mesh.
Oh, okay. All
just
right.
Just get it underground.
Fine. Okay, thanks much. Listen to you every Saturday.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Anne. Okie doke, we're going to take our last break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
I got to tell you, when you've worked with somebody for a couple of years, you get to know the facial expressions. And I know, for without her saying anything, that Charlie wants to say something. So there you go, Charlie.
Thank you, Dean. So listen, I just flashed on this while the commercials were running. Cool weather is coming. At my house, it's going to be down, not below freezing, but very close. Down, supposedly overnight, we're talking some lows around 4 or 5 degrees, but feeling like 1 or 2 or 3 degrees. So what does that mean? Make sure that if you've got tropical plants outside right now, that you're giving them a bath, washing them off, letting them dry outside in the sun today, and get them in the house. I have basil outside right now. That will just absolutely turn black in those kinds of temperatures. So I'll be harvesting that all before these cool temperatures. If you've got Christmas cactus, hopefully they are outside and they can withstand those cool temperatures. Amaryllis, on the other hand, we might want to consider start bringing those down into the house, down into the basement this week.
I have a jade outside. I should bring that in.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. I forgot to put my Christmas cactus out this year. I feel badly.
Well, I'll put it out on a porch or something for now. Just get it, give it some cool temperatures.
Okay, cool. Okay, great. Let's go to Gloria. Gloria's calling from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show. Gloria?
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. I have a question about hostas. Mm-hmm. So I was moving my garden around in the spring, and I took some hostas out, dug them out, and put them in pots. They're in pots about 12 inches wide by 18 inches deep. I was wanting to put some height in my garden, so I've left them in the pots over the summer. Can I leave them in the pots over the winter?
You would be amazed how tough hostas are. You can definitely leave them in the pots. Do you need to bury those pots for the winter? Maybe not. If you have a side of your house where you live, where you can tuck those pots, leaving them above ground, but on an eastern side, so you've got, they're out of the northwest wind. They don't need to be in any sun, though, if they get some sun, that's fine, morning sun. But you don't want them in a sunny, like super sunny spot or a windy spot. But yeah, they'll survive just fine in pots. Burying them in underground, for sure they'll survive, but you might not even need to bury them. I've had hostas survive years and years in pots above ground.
So I don't need to put them in the garage then?
No, don't put them in the garage. They'll just dry out in the garage. It'll be dark, and I would leave them outside. They'd be happier outside.
And we want them to be happy. Okay. Thanks, Gloria. Okay, we're going to jump now to John. John is calling from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, John.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean. Yes, I have a problem with my tomato plants this year. Mm-hmm. And so what I was finding is that when the tomato was almost ripe and ready to pick, it would shrivel right on the vine. And so I lost a lot of tomatoes that way. And then this week I went out and the plant had gone black.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what you had happening in your garden this year is something called blight. There's three kinds of blight: early blight, mid blight, and late blight. Early and mid means we lose some leaves and the plants look a little ugly, but we still get fruit. Late blight knocks the plants out. So you'll see it, the black will start to move along the stem. So what was a green stem, it starts to get gray and black and shrivel. Of course, the fruit also shrivels. The plants are trash once late blight sets in, generally speaking. So that's, how do we avoid that? Well, sometimes it's environmental, like it's something that's going to happen with the late blight. It's a fungus. It prefers, you know, the kind of coolish 15 to 20 degrees Celsius kind of temperatures and cool nights, moist weather, you know, warm days, all that sets up late blight, perfect conditions. Best thing you can do in the future moving forward is do not plant tomatoes in the same spot next year. Choose a different location or go into pots if you don't have unlimited garden space. And give the plants lots of air circulation, which is an advantage of a pot. You put one plant per 16-inch or 20-inch pot, and you can get them spaced out nicely with air and sun penetrating, and you will be just in good condition in terms of those plants not getting blight.
If I wanted to plant something else in that spot next spring, do I need to clean the soil or do anything with that?
No, there's nothing really you can do to clean the soil. You can plant anything there except plants in the same family as tomatoes. So no peppers, no tomatoes, no eggplants. However, you can plant lettuce and beans and peas, any flowers, whatever.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much there. Holy cow. It is, here we are. Like we got like
two,
I know, eh? Get to the end of the show so very, very quickly every week.
I know. And we were all over the map with our questions.
We were.
My brain is like, moo.
Yeah. So, and it's still some merit in getting my Christmas cactus out even for like a week or so?
Yeah, for
sure.
Yeah,
okay.
You know why? It'll set, because otherwise, unless you're seeing buds on your Christmas cactus now, the best way to get Christmas cactus blooming is to put it out into cool temperatures.
Gotcha.
It will set buds. Now, you have to leave it outside in order for the buds to actually flower at Christmas time, which is pretty challenging. Usually what happens is we bring them in November and they bloom within a week of bringing them in. But still, nevertheless, you're kind of guaranteed flowers on your Christmas cactus if they're outside in the cool temperatures.
Beautiful. And this is exciting because now I finally get to bring in my two amaryllis bulbs and put them into the dark place. And I did notice over the last couple of weeks that the leaves finally started to wilt and die down, right? Their job's done.
Good.
I guess their job's done for the season.
And you were avoiding watering, obviously.
I did, yeah. I took your advice. I haven't watered them in about 2 or 3 weeks now. So they've been sitting on the sill outside, and it faces south. And so they've been getting lots of sun.
Yeah.
And, I keep every couple of weeks or every week or so, I feel the bulb, and they're nice and hard.
Good. Yeah, and they've just naturally gone to sleep, so to speak, gone dormant with no water, even in the bright light like that.
Okay.
And it might even be cooler at your place than mine. So, no, that's great. That's exactly what you want. So, yes, sometime in the next couple of days when you get a chance, I know you're a busy guy, so when you get a chance, get them down into the dark and just forget about them.
Sweet. I know what I wanted to comment. We were talking to that caller about the hostas outside. Sometimes it's harder if you put them in the garage, right? It's harder on the plant, right? And there's not a lot of insulation or anything sunlight.
Well, that's it. Sometimes garages get quite warm, like mine does. I have western sun beating into my garage. So a warm garage is what you don't want because that will keep the plant growing. Right? Cold outside is just the way it should be, right? It's very natural conditions, temperature and light levels. So often I find that's the best with hardy plants like hostas.
Okay, okay.
Thanks, Dean. Have a wonderful week coming up. And
you too.
Anthony, you've just been an absolute star as our newest producer. So keep up your good work. Thanks, everybody, for the great calls. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.